Time to pivot over and talk a little bit about, visit with Eric Dexter from the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, talking education. Welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
No, glad to have you on here. Love when we have these conversations because the Opportunity Data Project continues to evolve. It continues to be very, very revealing. What's the latest?
So as I just kind of mentioned before, last time I was on, we're doing this multi-year research project called the Opportunity Data Project. We're looking at what we call the drivers of opportunity in the Baton Rouge area. So there's six particular areas of focus that we're looking at. There's economic prosperity, regional resilience, quality of life, community safety, healthcare with healthy families, and of course, education, which is what we're currently focused on. And continuing off the recent briefing that we did on early childhood education, we recently released just last week another briefing that's looking at the K through 12 educational landscape in East Baton Rouge Parish.
And what are we looking at with the K through 12 landscape in Baton Rouge?
So we wanted to take a deeper dive looking at the research and understanding what types of opportunities, but also the challenges that students and families face in the educational system in the parish. And so there's a few bright spots that we had, also some areas of challenges that we need to improve on. But there's also some uniqueness about the East Baton Rouge Parish school system. One in particular is that we have a very high rate of students that are attending Catholic schools. Or private schools or homeschooled in East Baton Rouge Parish. And that's about 1 in 5, which is about 4 times greater than national average. Of course, you can look at, you know, South Louisiana. We have a large Catholic population. You have the Catholic schools as well. We also went through the longest desegregation case for a public school system in the country where we had integration going back decades ago, and families, many of them moved out of the parish or they put their kids into private schooling as well. And so when you combine that mix, that, you know, gives us somewhat of that uniqueness of having a high population of students that are attending private schools.
Is there still holdover on that front?
I believe so. If you look at the trends of where the numbers went. Now, of course, there are families that also moved outside of the parish.
Right.
And as you know, suburban parts of the parish and our neighboring parishes grew so that those students and those families, you know, go with them into the school systems.
The number of people attending Catholic school, the number of students at Catholic schools, you mentioned is a bright spot.
It's a spot. I don't necessarily call it this bright spot, but it's a part of the data that we're getting back that's unique.
Okay. Because, like, I personally send my kids to a Catholic school because my wife and I are Catholic, and we want to raise our kids with a Catholic education. We want them going to religion class every day.
Correct.
There are a number of students at every diocesan school in Baton Rouge who are just there because the options aren't the best around.
Sure.
So, and that's why I asked, because I thought you were mentioning as a bright spot, but on the bright side, you're going to get a number of blue ribbon schools town with the Catholic schools. So when you look at the overall scope here, you're getting blue ribbon. But the flip side of that is there's so much work to do on the public end.
Correct. And a good thing. So one of the bright spots that we found is that, you know, there's really 4 tracks that a student may take, starting with kindergarten, going through first grade, all the way through high school. There's about 4 different tracks that a student and their family, of course, may take. There's the charters or independent school districts which have increased in population over the years. But then most of the rest of the students are either kind of in an A-track course, that C area, and then the D and F schools are kind of lumped together.
Right.
If you are in that A-track, which means you end up at Liberty or Baton Rouge High, you're going to get one of the best educational experiences you can get in the entire state. Matter of fact, you talk about some of those blue ribbon schools. We have some of those schools here in Baton Rouge, and they do this every single year.
Yeah.
And so you have some high performing schools, and you'll get a high quality education in those schools. The problem is that it's only about 7% of the students that live in East Baton Rouge Parish are attending the A-rated schools. The rest, of course, are going to be in the C, which is around 22%, and then the overwhelming majority at 44% are in DNF schools.
What should be the priority there? Is getting C schools up to that A track or raising up the DNF schools to C's?
I think you'd want them all to be A first, of course.
No, obviously. Yeah. you don't eat an elephant in one bite.
Sure. Of course. Well, you know, the thing is, so if we go back and we look at the elementary schools, that the primary schools that the students are coming from, what's the high signaling is the data is that once you start at that school or in that track is usually where you're going to end up. So if you're in that DNF high school, then you likely have started at sometimes maybe a B, But more often than not, it's going to be C, D, or an F elementary primary school. Mm-hmm. And so what we can start is by improving on those first. Because if you can improve on the outcomes and performance levels of kids starting at kindergarten and then, of course, going into the third grade,
right.
then, of course, those students just matriculate. Like, the schools themselves is just a physical location. And sure. it's a building. But it's the students who are in, and you know, of course, the teachers that
the
are there
teacher,
that yeah. are performing that produce the grades that we have.
You have the students, the teachers, but you also have the parents as well.
Correct.
So Opportunity BTR tell us anything about parental buy-in?
Yeah, so one of the recommendations that we have, because there was three recommendations we had out of the most recent briefing, and these are all based on what we have here locally, like the current environment and the landscape, but also looking at national best practices is working in other peer areas. And one of them is providing additional resources and supports for families. We've consistently seen that when that exists in the household, then students will perform better. That's also what we see in a lot of the high-performing schools. And most of these high-performing schools, by the way, like Liberty Magnet, has 61% of students are from economically disadvantaged households. So even students that are from disadvantaged economically disadvantaged households can perform well, but it's when you have that student mix is right. when you start to see some of that performance. And you can look at some of the areas that when you look at social capital that you get. And I don't know if most people know what social capital is. But for instance, if my child goes to school with your child and my child is interested in accounting, I don't know why, but you know, okay. they may be a young child interested in accounting. Well, it just so happens that Brian happens to be in accounting. And, you know, little Jimmy is telling, you know, hey, my dad is an accountant. You know, I heard you want to intern. You're looking for something. My dad could probably tell you more about it. Okay, let me introduce you. Next thing you know, you've made that introduction. The child has learned a little bit more about accounting. Next thing you know, he has an internship,
right.
and the rest is history. Most of us in our lives, I think most of us that we consider ourselves successful in our professional lives, all had that type of second and third level of support, even outside of the household. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that a lot of that exists when students that are in kind of these high-performing environments as they get through high school, and as a severe lack of that when you have some of the underperforming schools in the city.
How can we integrate that, like reverse integrate that? I mean, how would that work?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the schools that are performing well, they're, you know, somewhat of diverse by design. There's the open enrollment, but there's also some of the magnet component to that as well, where some students test in. But you do have a school like Basis Matera, who's a charter school as well. So that's also what you kind of have that diverse by design, where it's a mix of the student populations. Mm-hmm. What we can expand on, or we can do, is expand on those types of schools that exist that are doing well. You look at FLAME, the Foreign Language Academic Immersion Magnet. Maybe consider expanding that into a middle school or a high school. You continue to expand the schools that are actually performing well, as opposed to always going back to the schools who are not as performing well and trying to drastically change those schools of where they are. There is no, and I think this is one of the key points that Rhett Morris, our partner, made with Common Good Labs last week when we hosted an education event. There is not one school that we can find where you have a 90% population from economically disadvantaged households that are performing well. And so there's reasons behind that, and we have to, you know, look at that early on. Going back, well, all the way back to kindergarten, by the way.
Okay, now this is going to be the hard question. We got Eric Dexter from the Baton Rouge Area Foundation with us, talking about K-12 education via the opportunitybtr.org. How do we start to implement any kind of change, help, guidance along the way without looking like any students being written off?
Sure. So that's an awesome question. So one of the things we're doing right now, and I saw you had Vaughn and Shanoa on most recently with the East Baton Rouge Parish School System. And so actually just yesterday we had our second meeting of a East Baton Rouge Parish or ECE task force that we put together. And this is Superintendent Cole, who was there and present on his off day, by the way, since they're on fall break. But so is Shanoa. She was on. And we have folks from the mayor's office. Anyone who is involved in the early childhood education landscape is sitting at the table. And what we want to do is, you know, look at the, you know, early childhood education, you know, landscape that exists and what's working. And we want to lean in more to that. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, fix some of the challenges that we have. Now, what are we going to do about it is the key. You know, we right. have, you know, Superintendent Cole, as I'm sure you've seen in the news, we talked about some of the schools that are under capacity. I think there's over 24 schools that are currently under capacity. And the ones that are under 50% capacity, by the way, are also some of the more lower performing schools. And so what can you do with those facilities? Can you expand again on some of these programs that are working in other schools that are high performing, as opposed to just pouring more into, you know, a facility that is not currently working?
The when it comes to implementing more resources, our resources as a parish and as a school system are going to be finite. I mean, that's just the nature of things. So are we to a point yet where we're starting to make decisions about we're going to invest in this, this, and this, but not this?
Yeah, well, I can say from the Baton Rouge Area Foundation standpoint, we're getting to that point. We have been over the last year doing some of our desk work and actually getting ready to visit a few places that are doing early childhood education and education in general fairly well in the public school systems. And so what we want to do is to kind of go back to your point of what types of resources and support are there for the families, because the families are the families. We're talking about children. So children aren't raising themselves. There are literacy tools and resources that you can provide to families that will have them reading at kindergarten, having them ready, but then also having them reading ready at third grade and then proficient at math by the eighth grade. That is what we're trying to tackle. But you have to identify those students who need the help at most when you see them. And so we can't let them continue to trickulate throughout the school system when they're so far behind, because if they're not reading at third grade level, then they're not going to be able to read, you know, going to the eighth grade. And that's what we have to do. We can't let them continue to go where they are. We have to really, almost like taking an aspirin. When you take the aspirin, your nose where to go in your body to kind of alleviate the pain. And we have to be able to do that and provide those resources to the students who need them most by the third grade, because that's
by the
key.
Reading
at third grade level at proficiency is one of the greatest predictors of success you have for our students' success
in their school. Which is why we're already seeing the effects of the Steve Carter Literacy Program. Yep. And now that it's starting to expand out to numeracy as well, let's hope there'll be added benefits on top of that. And yeah, this is why we spend so much time talking about early childhood education, is because if you've got the buy-in at K-3 or pre-K-3, it makes pre-K-4 easier,
correct,
which makes K easier, yep, which makes 1 easier. And then it goes on from there. He is Eric Dexter from the Baton Rouge Area Foundation. Thank you so much for a couple minutes today.
Oh, glad you have me, man. I'm always happy to come back.